You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today we're exploring the issues facing residents in the city of Wilmington as they consider which candidates will best serve their interests in this year's municipal elections. Earlier, we met six-term Mayor Bill Sappho, who's had no trouble trouncing challengers with a smaller margin of victory in 2009, winning just 61% of the vote. But in later elections, Bill Sappho won 71%, 92%, 95%, 85%, that's in chronological order. This year, he faces challenger Devin Scott, who served on the board of the Cape Fear Economic Development Council. Devin Scott says he founded a tech consultancy and helps business startups make digital technology decisions. He was a speaker at TEDx Airlie, and he founded Eidolon Institute, an agency that helps regional startups. He says he works with local organizations to help promote economic development throughout the region. Devin Scott, welcome to Coastline.
Glad to be here.
So in the bio you sent us, you say you work with local organizations to help promote economic development throughout the region. How specifically do you do that?
So I spent a lot of time volunteering and working with the Network for Entrepreneurs in Wilmington. A lot of that is introduction, helping set up events, filming, broadcasting, and working with individuals, including startups for especially in the tech sector, which is where my specialty is, providing solutions. And by that broad word just means software, code, and a lot of other tools.
You've also said that you spend time devoted to Wilmington through volunteering and the development of tools that serve the city. What do you mean by that?
One of the my favorite experiences was working with Step Up Wilmington as a volunteer coordinator, facilitator for, their programs. I put together some curriculum for their ambassador program for leadership and entrepreneurship, and also helped with their goal-setting program.
And for those who aren't familiar with Step Up Wilmington, tell us what they do.
Well, they're a wonderful organization that works to help people overcome barriers into the job economy. And those barriers could be anything. It could be transportation, your first language, or even being new to the area, not having a network in which to onboard into the work sector. I've also worked on creating tools after Hurricane Florence, a software tool that involved a lot of phone calls and a lot of organizations to get people back into homes after the displacements occurred from water damage.
How did that tool work?
Well, it didn't work great, to be completely honest. It was one of those panic actions. My family had an extra room, and we opened it up for a family. And the moment we put up on the Facebook Marketplace, in the first minute, we got 12 responses, and we were overwhelmed with the amount of people we couldn't help. So being a software guy, I spent the next 2 days putting together a piece of software that connected people who had space with people who'd lost space. Speaking with the real estate agents and the property managers, that was the biggest problem, including the nchousingsearch.org. They had this list of people, but they couldn't sort through it. But sorting through names and matching people, that's a software problem.
You have a really unique perspective, especially for Wilmington. You spent your early years in Brooklyn, New York.
Correct.
Then you moved here when you were a really young teenager. And tell us about how you see the city now, and give us kind of the global view of your vision for the city of Wilmington.
Wilmington opened up a lot of opportunities for me. I've done art here. I've built businesses here. I've built a family here. And it's interesting because the time that I was growing into those opportunities, I had to search for them. And once I found them, they were strong. So I'm familiar both with the fact that there is a lot that the city has to offer, but that it takes a lot of digging to uncover them, especially if the job market might not necessarily be amiable to what you're looking for, or if you haven't found a network or community or society that serves what you need. My goal is to not only strengthen those individual locations, the businesses, the nonprofits, especially in the tech sector and the arts sector, because the arts sector is struggling as we lose stages one after another. I would love to make it more accessible and more transparent.
How do you strengthen nonprofits and arts organizations as part of city government?
Well, city government has a unique position in that people see us. You can't make an overt statement to say, well, support this organization, support that organization, but you can give them opportunities. The same way we give any developer an opportunity with an RFP, we can look for opportunities through block grants or other federal funding programs to give them an opportunity to apply for something. And there's also a call for collaboration. Wilmington is notorious for lacking collaboration in a lot of places. That's actually a Southeast regional issue. And by championing that collaboration, whether you are a elected leader or any kind of leader, you make an overt statement for something that we truly need, rather than creating the silo after silo non-network system that we're very used to and prone to building here.
What are some other examples of collaboration regionally that would benefit the city of Wilmington?
Well, I think I'd start by saying that we need to think about the city of Wilmington as being beyond the city. The city itself can't grow. It can't expand in any major way. We need to start thinking about New Hanover, and we need to start thinking about Pender and Brunswick. We need to imagine a type of tri-county collaboration, a coalition even, to grow and survive off of each other's strengths. We're running out of land in Wilmington. We have 3,000 acres left of developable land and a dearth of industrial real estate. So as we're trying to attract businesses, we don't necessarily know where to put them. We need to make these connections to our neighboring counties so that we can grow together by surviving off of all of our assets.
Well, how would you do that? I mean, I think it's reasonable to speculate that, say, New Hanover County commissioners probably know Brunswick County commissioners and probably interface with them on some level on a regular basis.
Well, I would make a statement that the legitimacy of the campaign I'm running is a statement, is a validation that we have a new series of thoughts, a new series of attitudes towards leadership. And I think we need to play off of that and make that overt statement towards collaboration. It's not enough to know people, but we don't have a regional vision. In 2013 and 2014, we actually had a Gartner report come out for New Hanover that mentioned very distinctly that we needed to make that collaboration. And over a series of focus groups and online surveys, time and time again, leaders in government, in the private sector, in the public sector, all said that we lack regional vision. But we haven't made that statement yet. Now, that's since 2013. It's time to make that vision and time to make it with our neighbors.
We learned earlier this week that New Hanover County was going to pull out of funding by 2021 for the public transit system in the region. And this is a system that the city of Wilmington has supported. It's always been a challenge finding the funding for this and finding a way to increase choice riders at the same time that you need to increase service to get those choice riders. It's like this impossible catch-22. Do you have ideas about that now? And what did this announcement earlier this week do to your ideas about that?
Well, what it gave me was a sense of greater urgency. We have until July 2021, but we're definitely going to lose some of our partnership with the county, which didn't provide that much money. It was about 5%, but it's still incredibly important for an organization that's around $750,000 in deficit. We cannot grow our region economically without having strong public transportation. And if you look at any model city, whether it's Savannah, if you're looking at Chattanooga, if you're looking at Charleston, it's part of the blueprint. It's part of the template. We can't think about public transportation as being anything except for an investment for economic development. And so our attitude needs to change. I actually spent some time speaking with WAVE and with their mobility operator, and what we hear is a conversation between the city and with public transportation, in that the city feels that they're bailing out our public transportation services because of that deficit. The county obviously has made overt statements that they want to pull out, but meanwhile, what public transportation here needs is both money and direction, which they're not getting. And that's actually an extension of that regional vision conversation.
So how do you foster that kind of regional collaboration or cooperation on issues that the county commissioners, for instance, aren't remotely interested in?
Well, vote. We engage a greater amount of civic engagement, and our votes allow us to decide who our leaders are. And further, a vision does a lot. Without a vision, the people will perish. if we say overtly that we want to grow into a financial tech sector or into a resort town, and we can foster that that collaboration and everyone gathers around that idea, well, now we have a direction. Without it, what you have is action simply for the sake of action and growth by coincidence, which is never going to be a successful model.
Are either of those visions visions that you would want to promote?
I'm very, now, of course, my bias is obvious, but I'm very in favor of financial technology. I'm also a big sustainability advocate. So I believe in our environment and life sciences sector, given the assets of our region, the university, and the Marbionic facility, and just so many other factors, including just the amount of health and wellness workers we have. We in the county have a way above the national average of proprietors working in those sectors, and we've actually seen growth in their income up to 71% in the past earlier in the decade. I'd love to foster that and allow them to succeed, thrive, so that we can use those strengths and really move in people from different areas in a certain talent pool based off of the fact that we have experts in quality of life.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Today, we're meeting the two people who hope to be the next mayor of Wilmington. Right now, talking with Devin Scott, who is challenging incumbent Mayor Bill Staffo. The Star News published a letter today from Raymond Groh, who writes, "I've read the statements made by the folks running for mayor and city council. Most of what is said is platitudes about managing growth, improving wages and housing, and protecting the environment." He talks about moving here 30 years ago, and while politicians talk, only a few of the things that needed to be improved or protected came to fruition. And he proposes a comprehensive plan that actually has some legal teeth to it, in which the public would have inputs. And this plan, he says, could detail protecting green space, determining what kind of development or housing should take place to meet the growth needs while protecting the beauty of our neighborhoods. What would you say to Raymond Groh, who's saying, "I'm tired of hearing about the platitudes. These are all lovely ideas, but give me specifics"?
Well, you know, the first statement is that he's right. To be fair, though, it is very hard to create a comprehensive platform that can fit on a pamphlet. Our comprehensive growth strategy is 199 pages of policy, graphs, charts, and surveys. And it requires a novel is deserved in order to really describe what we can do for a 25-year plan for a city. That being said, we do have a comprehensive growth strategy that is actually very elegant, and it does talk about our green spaces, our streetscapes, our growth, our housing. It's actually very well done, and a lot of intelligence is put behind it, but it's not necessarily – there's no evidence of it being put together in the city. Now, the corollary to that is the city strategy, which is a 7-bullet-point document that is sparse and a little bit unambitious. It doesn't actually speak to that comprehensive growth plan at all. You can tell they were written in two separate rooms, and they were. One was a planning commission job. The other one was done in the city manager's office. And if they communicated, if that strategy actually had that vision, and I know I could go on and on about vision, but it truly is important if you're trying to set a direction anywhere, then we can actually figure out ways to implement that comprehensive strategy in a way that makes sense for our regional growth.
New Hanover Regional Medical Center could be sold.
Yes.
And we this was a relatively recent development. There is now an advisory group who will shepherd the potential sale or other kind of reconfiguration, possibly, of NHRMC. There has been a lot of community concern over the process. Wilmington City Council recently passed a resolution 5-1 saying that they wanted to see this not happen before 12 months were up, and there were other contingencies built into that resolution that were actually supposedly part of the existing process anyway. But what would you say to folks who are looking for some sort of assurance that this will be a transparent process? How could you, if you were elected mayor, have any influence on how that unfolds?
So to his credit, one of the things that Mayor Staffo did request at that meeting was that there was a constant report from that board regarding the process and how it would go. And the city council was extremely satisfied with that answer. And I think that needs to be fostered and continued as much as possible. Now, obviously, a lot of this is a county issue, so it's hard to guarantee that they, the hospital, or that committee are going to be transparent, but the right step is to make an overt demand, whether it's through a resolution or simply saying that the people, the majority of the county, does have this desire in mind. And I think the council made a good move personally in representing the community through that resolution.
There's a great deal of public discussion about the issue of affordable housing these days. We actually had someone who was active on that front in Wilmington for quite a while, and he moved to Asheville, Paul D'Angelo, to become that city's community development program director, where he says Asheville is much more interested in fostering the cause of affordable housing. What would you do, were you elected as mayor of the city of Wilmington, to help that cause? And where does it fall on your list of priorities?
It is definitely the second hardest problem we have in the city, followed very closely by homelessness and the opioid crisis, because they're so multifaceted. The easy solution is to simply say we need to improve wages. Affordability will come into play once more people can afford what's on the inventory. But that isn't enough, and it doesn't help everybody. We've already discussed the fact that there are barriers to wages and barriers into the job economy, and people are already underemployed with multiple jobs. So we also need to speak to our developers. And 5% affordable housing in some of these multi these mixed-use dense units, constructions is not enough. And we've already come aware that we're on board to build around 3,100 new affordable units, and we need around 7,600 at the very minimum in order to meet the inventory. And the cities around our size start looking at needing 2,500 a year. We need to be on board for that. Now, one thing that I'm a really big fan of from an engineering front is the idea of creating units that are built off-site and assembled through moving parts. And there is a very large engineering movement to build more quickly that way. Now, I also know there's a sensitive issue that with my platform, my campaign, the idea of building more quickly doesn't necessarily cohere with what I'm talking about. But my problem isn't with development. It's with unintentional and irresponsible overdevelopment.
You talk about runaway development
quite a bit. And I think we need to speak very closely, very carefully about what we develop and why. And if we can use some of these engineering techniques and engage a greater amount of local vocational skills and make intentional decisions to give our people, our citizens who live here right now and are struggling, affordable homes and opportunities to live in ways that aren't above their means, that is the kind of intention, that is the kind of development we should focus on.
So there are going to be people listening to this who hear that and cheer you on because they want to see workforce housing, more affordable housing created in this region. There are also going to be people who listen to this and say, I'm tired of hearing about that. People can afford what they can afford. Can you make an economic case for more affordable housing in the city of Wilmington?
Yeah, so very first thing to mention is that it's a good kind of problem because it is the standard growing pain for every city that is succeeding. It's like having pain in your knees when you're a teenager. It means that you're moving ahead and you are growing healthily. Every city does have to solve that problem. And if we can get ahead of it, we can make a very large statement for our region. So that is actually an opportunity for us to be heroes. It's an opportunity for us to be to set the problem off ahead of time. It gives us an opportunity to make a statement and to be very strong there. But the economic platform is this: a human being is the most important part of a city's infrastructure because they are generative. And when more people do better, we all do better. We give more opportunities and then you see more growth, especially what I said about the county having an above average amount of proprietors in the region than the rest of the nation. What if we gave all those people greater opportunity to earn more and to do more work and to bring in more income from outside of our region? And that what if is a what if, but it's a what if based in reality, based off the numbers and the amount of people that are working and thriving and struggling here in the city.
So let's talk about economic growth then from other points of view. Runaway development. Well, that development is also contributing to the economy here, as you acknowledge. So what's the way to stop runaway development without putting the kibosh on economic growth?
Well, yeah, exactly. You can't have economic development without development. The problem is, again, a problem of priority. Our land development has outpaced our economic development and also outpaced our infrastructure maintenance. And a lot of the times, if you just change your priorities, you understand that some things have to come above others because it's simply time for them to, that attention does take away from attention elsewhere. And I talked about in my campaign a smart growth filter. Does it make sense for something to be somewhere? And again, our Planning Commission does a lot of work with this with the comprehensive plan, but I think we need to be a little bit more stringent on a lot of these programs and say, can we build something here if it's not going to lend to a grocery store also being attracted to the area? Is this going to add to the amenities? Does this structure, does this this zoning decision benefit the entire city? I also want to make a statement about the way we earn money here. The city earns most of its income from property taxes. And we could also earn from sales tax, but the county takes most of that. Now, of course, this is part of that city-county disconnect. But the reality is that we don't see a large amount of income from sales tax. Maybe it's time to renegotiate that. Or maybe it's also time to have a conversation about the fact that property tax is a fixed pie. The only way to get more from that is to build more and then to increase the property tax rate. But again, we talk about generative income opportunities. If you improve your economic opportunities by improving economic development, making these walkable neighborhoods, complete neighborhoods, public transportation, so there is more regional and local economic activity going on, also exciting investors and all the other things we can do, well, now you've had an opportunity to see sales tax income improve and grow without having to raise the rate. Looking for those generative opportunities when the opportunity is there is going to be one of the key things that we do.
We've had questions about food deserts and what to do about those. Do you have that? Sounds like a component of the overarching economic philosophy you just explained.
Yes.
But how would you address food deserts?
Well, the good news is already being addressed, and we simply need to copy that model. It is a shame and actually a travesty that people need to leave their zip code in order to get fresh vegetables. There is currently a Northside Co-op project that members of my campaign are currently consulting on and engaged in. And as we've seen, the East-West Partners new development happening at the gateway to the city also promotes the idea of having a grocery store in there. Now, a lot of that project doesn't make sense, but a lot of it does. And here's the key thing about where it's positive. Grocery stores can only be placed where there are rooftops enough in order to serve that community, in order to serve the grocery store. By creating a series of units, you create the rooftops along with the space for the grocery store. So that opportunity is almost necessary to pursue in that regard. I would love to see more affordable units there, and I would love to see more opportunities for local entrepreneurship in those storefronts. And those are regional programs that we can pursue as well.
There are a lot of big expenses coming down the pike for the city, including upfitting buildings so that they can withstand stronger hurricanes. Sea level rise is also, as we know, occurring, and we see that evidenced in downtown Wilmington on Water Street. There are more days of what we call nuisance or sunny day flooding, and Water Street and across the river, Battleship Park gets flooded on a pretty frequent basis.
Yes.
What should the city be doing about this?
Well, the first question is what the city shouldn't be doing, and that's not removing more trees. The fact that they are the most effective water displacement unit in the city, the fact that they provide, they sit in pervious ground, they are windbreaks. A lot of our resiliency, our ecological resiliency, is based on the fact that we are in this weird situation where we're both in a marsh and also surrounded by tall pines and hardwoods. And when we disrupt that balance, we ruin that resiliency. And talking about climate change, well, we're also contributing to the problem when we remove our carbon sinks. We really need to protect and treasure those assets as much as possible.
So downtown Wilmington, though, that's less about trees. I mean, what would you do there?
Obviously. So, again, more of what we shouldn't do. We have a recent development where we've avoided making some flood concerns. We need to be more concerned with our new developments and making them flood resilient.
And that's this edition of the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Devin Scott, thanks for being with us and sharing your views.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks also to Wilmington Mayor Bill Sappho. Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Coastline producer is Caitlin Freund. News producer is Rachel Keith. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org. Get the podcast. Find it on the HQR app. Early voting is underway. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.